It's Thursday, November 10th, and today we're having a breezy breakfast with the new kids in the hall. Guelph City Hall, that is. Linda Basuto, Eric Kitten, Ken Lee Cho, Carly Clayson, and Michelle Richardson tell us about themselves, their words, their plans, and what they'd like to see in the next term of City Council. But first, we'll hear some advice from outgoing councillors James Gordon and June Hovland.
All right, good morning on this beautiful November 10th, 2022. Today we'll be getting to know the five new faces that will be around the horseshoe for the next 4 years. I'd like to start with the City of Guelph's land acknowledgement. As we gather, we are reminded that Guelph is situated on treaty land that is steeped in rich Indigenous history and home to many First Nations, Inuit, and Métis people today. As a city, we have a responsibility for the stewardship of the land on which we live and work. Today, we acknowledge the Mississaugas of the Credit First Nation of the Anishinaabeg peoples, on whose traditional territory we are meeting. So today we're going to get a little more information about our five new candidates. They are Linda Busuttil, Carly Klassen, Michelle Richardson, Aaron Caton, and Ken Chu. But first, I would like to call upon James Gordon to give the new councillors a brief idea of what they can expect at council.
Thanks, Tanya, and welcome all these newbie councillors. I'm very excited about what might be in store for the city with all this great new energy. We learned in the campaign that those newbies elected, I think, are bringing a lot to the table. But I think I wanted to mention briefly what that table might look like. I found it a pretty steep learning curve. That might be because I'm not very smart, but I don't really know. I think maybe Phil will speak about it later because he has a special interest in this. I think the learning curve for me was just around how governance works. I think that there is a difference between theory and practice around this, in that we learned as best we could. And I know, as a sidebar, that you mentioned a boot camp earlier. This might have been different for June too. The city and the clerk's office is getting more efficient and better at bringing new counselors on board with some training. I don't remember getting very much of that. So the learning curve was pretty big, but the theory and practice is that you see what looks like the rules. It looks like seems to be how the city runs. And then in practice, sometimes it can be a little bit different. So there's a lot of getting used to, and that has to do with the way meetings are chaired, the way agendas are prepared. I also found that I had to really learn, I never really learned it well, but time management is very difficult. Some folks, we've talked about this before, find that if you want to be really efficient and effective at the job, it's a full-time job with part-time pay. And that doesn't work economically or energy-wise for a lot of people. So you have to prioritize where you can be the most effective. And this might be self-promotion, but I found pretty quickly that it was difficult to find ways to outreach and connect with the community aside from inside that building, which is how the Breezy Breakfast was created. As a means to connect with community. And I think it's been pretty effective for that. I think managing the one thing that I found was an unusual part of the job I didn't guess was that a lot of energy gets consumed by what I would call being a referral service, because there is a certain demographic in the city that is looking for information. They have concerns they want to express. So they call their counselor, which is great. That's part of the job. However, the main thing that the counselors can do in response is say, well, you should be talking about to the planning department about this application you're trying to put together. You should be talking to bylaw. Here's the email. So often we're just like the concierge of issues to see where can those be filtered through. The other thing that I never got used to was just the volume of reading that is expected every week before a meeting. It's not unusual to see 1,000 pages. And can that be done? No. and if you do it, it's exhausting and it takes an awful lot of time. So you have to learn about what parts of reports are boilerplate.
That's for sure.
Yeah.
In other words, what parts are necessary from a procedural standpoint, and what parts are really necessary to read as far as the issues goes. And I never learned that correctly. You try to get through it all. You have to prioritize what issues are for you. I remember June, we talked about this before. Sometimes I get a call from June or Phil saying, hey, there's a lot on the plate this week. What's juicing you? What's of your particular interest that you can focus on and hope that other counselors focus on the rest? So those are just some of the things that I remember being hard to get used to and part of the learning curve. So I'll pass it along now.
Phil and June, we've got about 4 minutes if you'd like to give your input on what counselors can expect, new counselors can expect.
I would just like to say that, James, you did a great job on your summary. And I don't have much to add, except I got good at reading the executive summaries.
Oh, yeah.
Really, really important, because you can't get through 700 and 800 page reports. So focusing on executive summaries and having questions prepared ahead of time is always a good plan. I did the job full time, and there, because I wasn't working, I didn't have another job. Well, initially I had 3 jobs, and then I got elected and I went, whoa, I have to let go of something. And I would just like to advise the new group that it's really important to put your family first.
Yes.
Always family first. And have some work-life balance. That's what I had to learn. At the beginning, I did everything and was getting tired and a little resentful. So make sure that you look after your family and find some work-life balance.
I'd like to turn it over to Carly Klassen. What are your hopes, your dreams, and your plans? And sort of what are you doing to prepare, in particular for the budget, which is just around the corner, and Guelph's mandate to grow and the water issues that come with that? Carly.
Hey there, I'm Carly. Thanks for the intro. And that's a big question. I'm really looking forward to, I've been really lucky. A lot of people have been meeting with me. So June and Phil, and I've talked to with James a lot and Rodrigo, and I'm very well supported by a lot of the existing counselors. Yesterday, Dominique actually came by as well, and we had a good chat. So I think learning from people who have been doing the job for some time, I think is going to be an essential part of getting myself prepared. Technically the job hasn't quite started yet, so I am trying to get things in place. We do start some of our orientation this week, and as I like have things like an email and then access to different directories, I think I'm going to be meeting with more people and, you know, starting to learn a little bit more about kind of the what's like the details, the process, and things like that. That's going to be important. And as far as like big picture goes, I'm really excited to see how Kansas and Council is going to work together. I think that there's there's a group that I think could make some great decisions together. And as we kind of look at the next 4 years, I think there's going to be a lot of challenges. So I think, working together is going to be part of that. And how do I address some of these other larger issues? I will say I'm excited to see groundbreak on the library. That's something that is been waiting for a very, very long time. And then I think, I don't want to crack a big egg right first thing in the morning, but I think with some of the legislation that's coming down through the Ontario government, I think we're going to have an interesting 4 years, especially, as far as I see Brian's on the line and I met with Brian. I think as far as the Heritage, Act goes, I think that's something we're going to have to keep an eye on, as well as, just the development, the mandate to grow. It's going to be new territory for all counselors. So I think that's something that I'm mindful of as we kind of go forward. And you mentioned water. I mean, if we want to look further down the road, something that we talk about often during the election was that the water table here in Guelph can't support growth beyond, I think, 200,000. So, I think that's going to be something that needs to be part of this dialogue, especially with such aggressive growth targets. But overall, I will say, I think a lot of people have both been, telling me to be mindful that this is a lot of work, but also that I'm going to enjoy it and it's going to be an exciting time. So I am looking forward to it, and I feel grateful to be surrounded by people who have done this before and who are just a phone call away. So I know that I have lots of people around me that I can ask questions to, and that's what I'm going to be doing for the next probably a year, at least, maybe four.
Sorry, Julie.
I do have your phone number now in my phone, so.
Thank you. Thank you, Carly. We've got one, it was a last minute question. It's a long one. So in April, the previous city council voted to delegate authority to staff for decision-making around prioritization of major infrastructure projects. And this decision will be in effect through till the end of 2023. Do you agree with this course of action, or do you think these decisions should be made by council? And if you don't agree with this course of action, will you be looking to revisit this decision during this term of council?
Yeah, I mean, that's a very big question too. I think, I'm going to go back to something. The job hasn't quite started yet. So I think before I sort of start making calls about previous decisions, I need to sort of get up to speed and then also, really understand all of the pieces that went into making that decision before I can comment on how to kind of, if we want to change things going forward. I need to understand the big picture before I can kind of comment there.
Absolutely. Next, I'm going to call upon Linda to give us an idea of your hopes and dreams for this term of council, and some of the things that you're hoping to plan, some of the things that you're planning to do.
Thank you. And so I'm sorry I'm not there. Phil, order me takeout, please, and you can deliver it to me, okay? So I'm honored to be part of the new kids because I've been around for a while in the community, just in a different role. A little bit about myself. I'm a new Canadian, wasn't born in Canada, and my Italian, Spanish, my Arabic is at a grade 2 level. And so I bring experience. I am a developer, but a community development, grassroots, literacy. I do work with a co-op, and we're looking at housing through that lens. And I did consulting work for 10 years with economic development in the city of Toronto. So I have, setting up incubators to community-based grassroots. How do we do this? And my involvement in the city of Guelph has been, how do I take those skills and really make a difference at the grassroots? So what I found during the election was interesting is, and I'm going to call them pop-up politicians, people popping up with issues that have been here for a long time, but I haven't really seen them active in the community. Like, for example, Kevin, who's been working on housing in the community. And I think as a group of individuals, we need to elevate the people who are on the grassroots working on issues in the political process and really support them. And that's something to take back to when Phil organizes kind of a debrief. I have 16 years experience in governance and procedure and legislation and provincial governments from Hal, as a school board trustee, as a director with the Ontario Public School Board Association, a chair of provincial policy as well. The things that I love doing, I love legislation and procedure and budgets and plans. I get those in my brain. And I get them in my brain so that I can deconstruct them. So just the way that they're done, you know, undo them or do them in a different way. My goals here is the big one is community voice in Ward 4. And Ward 4 is on the other side of the Hanlon, if you're not familiar. A lot of new Canadian refugees, permanent residents, English is second language, and the perception and I think the reality that their voices and concerns really didn't have a mechanism to get to the conversations and decision making. So one of my top priorities is figuring out the best way to communicate with people and engage. I do a lot of phone calls, a lot of face-to-face, a lot of grassroots talking with people. So communication in Ward 4 is important. And I think one of the things that I was excited about after the election, people coming up to me and saying that they had never voted before and that this was the first election that they voted. And really, you know, if I have done a good job, I would have created a pathway and a system and an incubator for those individuals who don't have a voice to bring their own voice to municipal conversations. The other thing that I'm passionate about is transit. And in 2018, wearing my school board hat, is looking at our school busing and, you know, the business proposal and everything that got stalled around secondary schools and busing, which also fits into, I think it was your third question around climate change, around emissions. And so that comes through partnerships and building those plans and engaging people, you know, and time as well as doing that. The other one is housing. And again, through the community development, the West Village Community Development Cooperative, which is a charitable organization looking at affordable housing. And, you know, Kevin and I have met through Union Co-op and some other things, alternative ways to do things. It's about building back better, but building differently to get us there and engaging and looking at sustainability as well. Do you want me to just jump to your questions? I just jotted some yes. very quick notes.
Yes, definitely.
I've been in the land of school boards for a long time, a little bit busy with the never used before in collective bargaining, notwithstanding clause, just putting that out there. So around Heritage Guelph, as an immigrant, I'm always aghast at the lack of respect and appreciation for heritage. I'm from, you know, when I walk in Italy, you can walk down any street and from the doorknob to the you know, street, there is a heritage. But it's more than that for me. Heritage is a sense of place. It's a story that you are connected to. And it's funny, I was going to attend today, I'm not sure I am, a Wellington County meeting on social services, and it's in the Guthrie room. And I think, you know, there are people of privilege who have streets named after them and rooms named after them. And where do we have other people? And in the community development work that I do, you know, we have a large garden that we've created and intentionally involving families that are marginalized in the construction of the shade structure because of that pride and sense of place of you know, someone saying, I helped build that. That's part of our story. My connection with Heritage Guelph has been as a chair of property for the Upper Grand District School Board, you know, things like Central Public School, and I think it's the butterfly roof, you know, the designation on the list, Art Gallery of Guelph, that building is owned by the Upper Grand District School Board. That is our school. Liz Sandals actually went to that school. And so for me, I need to dive into, I've been in one sandbox, education through that lens. Now I need to kind of get on the other side and look at legislation. I looked at the terms of reference for Heritage Guelph after a conversation with Phil, but really at the root of this, and it was a conversation that I had with Phil after council's meeting around the West Guelph heritage designation, is the importance of place and the importance of stories and the importance of that connection. And so that is where I come from philosophically. I need to put on that other hat and look at things through legislation. And I just saw Susan pop up on my screen. And yes, that long history of Mitchell Farm, I actually put it on my tour. Here's Costco, that was Mitchell Farm. So that is part of it. The next question you had was about the York Lands Green Hub. I will be very honest there. It to me, it's like a Monopoly game. Like I sometimes, you know, I pop in and I watch who owns what land, what's happening with what land, where is that? I am not up to date on that file, I would say. I love the community initiative. I agree that there should be designated community lands. Disappointed, I think Aaron pointed out that the city missed the boat on some of those, but I am not up to date. You know, last night I tried to look at, okay, who owns what, where is things, to get an update on that. And I didn't finish that homework. Climate change, I saw Evan. Hi, Evan. The biggest thing that around adaptation, I follow very closely the work of the Wellington Dufferin Guelph Public Health Unit that looks at environmental emergency heat, cold, and a number of others. And as a school board trustee and provincial director, I put together some provincial motions because a climate change and environmental impact doesn't impact us all equally. It impacts those most vulnerable in the community, our Indigenous, our youth, our seniors, differently than it does us. So I follow public health. I am hoping that I will be able to get onto public health because I think that is a concern, just like education and some of our other public services that I would like to get involved with and support. Around climate change, the two things that I wrote down are partnerships and people and really listening. And, you know, some of the barriers that I see, and I talk about this during our campaign, is, you know, we talk about biking and connectivity that have good benefits around the environment, but through an equity lens. You know, I took some photos for our bus tour of our not-for-profit buildings and our high-rises where there's no places to put bikes. And so we're saying, we're gonna do this to reduce our impact. And then we have a large number of the community, members of the community, who have no way to do this. And so authentically, if we wanna do this through an equity lens, which also leads into, development, we have to talk about not just places to have housing, but places to live and that quality of life in through those other values and that engagement. And so that's it. I'm gonna take a break and mute.
Thank you, Linda, for that detailed response. We appreciate it. And while you're taking a break, I would like to circle back to Carly to ask sort of a broader question. What do you think you need to know about other wards in Guelph? And what makes your ward unique?
What makes Ward 2 unique, I think, I mean, is probably where we're sitting right now is part of it. We're right downtown Guelph, and that's sort of a major differentiator. And it's something that we talk about a lot that impacts a lot of the other wards in the community. So, but at the same time, it is only in Ward 2. So I think that is an important distinction to make. And downtown Guelph is also kind of surrounded by established neighborhoods that have been here for a long time, and there's a lot of heritage buildings in them. So talking about, you know, what is important to people in those buildings is, I think, really important. And then what about other wards?
transit, the work.
I think transit is going to be a big conversation. And how, how are we getting around the city? It's actually something that we've been talking about a lot with people, because I think right now it's definitely something that I've heard is an issue for people. What I'm here to do is also have conversations with people from all the different boards. And so I want to talk to people about what's important. We're sitting here, and I think part of my job has been through the campaigning period has been to listen to what is important to residents. And now that I'm not canvassing anymore, I think it's going to be about getting out and talking to people, not again, just in Ward 2. I'll keep talking to people in Ward 2, but then also, let's talk about how we can work together on some of these bigger issues.
Okay, thank you very much. Okay, so now I'd like to turn to Michelle Richardson. Let us know what you're thinking. And after that, I do have a question that was asked specifically to you.
So a little bit about me is, I'm a longtime Guelph resident. My grandparents were born in the Hillsborough and Erin area, and my other grandparents were born here. My parents were born here. The only reason I wasn't born here is because my dad was in the Canadian military. So I was born out in Edmonton for a couple of years and then came back to Guelph. So I have a long history. I'm really looking forward to this term of council. I think we've got some really, I'm really impressed with the caliber of candidates, or not candidates anymore, caliber of council members and council-elect that we're going to have, and really looking forward to doing some team building and getting to know everyone and really working as a strong, cohesive team. From what I've heard so far, we all seem to have a lot of similar values and are looking to do the best we can for our city, so I'm quite excited about that.
So Michelle, I'm now going to ask you a question that is specific to you.
Sure.
Since you are an employee of the county, will you have to declare a conflict of interest and recuse yourself for things like the annual budget discussion and votes, anything that has to do with shared expenses with the county?
Thank you for that question. That was the question I had quite a bit throughout my campaign. And I did certainly check into that before I even put my name forward and did receive a legal opinion. And there's nothing in the legislation that says that you cannot work for a separate municipality and be a councillor in another municipality. You cannot work for the municipality that you are a councillor in. And it's actually not that uncommon. Our CAO at the County of Wellington, Scott Wilson, he was a councillor at the County of Dufferin for many years. Our county clerk is retiring, and we've hired a lovely new woman named Jennifer Adams. She's actually a newly elected councillor in Center Wellington, and she will be the county clerk at the County of Wellington. And I don't know how many of you remember Sean Farley, but Sean Farley was a councillor many years ago and actually worked in the social services department at the County of Wellington. So there really shouldn't be any conflict of interest. As far as our shared services with the county, with the City of Guelph and the County of Wellington, the City of Guelph or the County of Wellington actually delivers social services on behalf of the province. And it's at the shared funding is based on either the known address of the client or the last known address if they don't currently have a home. And so if their last known address is a Guelph, it was a Guelph address, and then that cost share would be charged to the City of Guelph if they lived in the county or somewhere else, and that would go to the county. And the other way that the cost sharing is distributed is based on the physical locations of the buildings. So if there's a housing building that's in Palmerston, that would be the responsibility of the county for those costs. If the housing unit is in the City of Guelph, that would be the allocation of those fundings would go to the city. So I don't have any influence into any of the, to make any kind of financial decisions related to that. If there was an odd case that something came up, I would have no issue recusing myself and stepping back from a discussion or a vote if I felt that it was some kind of unfair influence, but it shouldn't really happen at all.
Yes, thank you for that clarification. I mean, there are times when councillors do recuse themselves on account of their associations with organizations like 10C, for example.
Yes.
So now I'm going to ask you the same question I asked Carly. What makes your ward unique, and what do you think you need to know about other wards in Guelph?
I'm excited to learn about other wards in Guelph. Because I think it's important that as county councillors, we're working as a group. It's really important to understand what's important to your fellow councillors and why maybe they're thinking a certain way or supporting a certain a project when it might not make sense to someone from the outside looking in. So lots to learn. There's so much diversity and uniqueness in our in the city of Guelph all across. So I'm excited about that. As far as Ward 3, I have an affinity for Ward 3 because I grew up in the area and I've had lots of family and friends that still live there. It's a very diverse ward, as we've got some long, beautiful areas that have been there for years and years and years. And we're also a settlement area. We've got a lot of new immigrants that come in, and that's an exciting part. We also have a lot of industry out that area as well. So, you know, a lot of things to consider through that.
Okay, thank you, Michelle. So now I would like to call upon Ken. Ken, what are your sort of hopes and dreams? And after you talk about that, I do have a question that was asked in advance directed to you specifically.
Oh. Thanks, Tanya, for the opportunity. And it's great to meet with some of you guys, albeit online. I look forward to meeting you guys all eventually in person at some point. And it's no secret that I'm a new face, a young face as well, and probably not the face that you typically would see on council or even like in Guelph whatsoever. I wasn't born and raised here like most folks were. I actually came here 7 years ago. I was a University of Guelph student when I first came here. And I was actually planning to go back to Vancouver, which is where I'm from, just after I graduated. But long story short, I met a girl and she just so happened to want to go into vet school, and she got in. And here we are. I guess I'm here to stay. And Guelph's really grown on me over the years, has many similarities to Richmond, BC, which is where I'm specifically from in the lower mainland. And I just see Guelph as this city with a lot of untapped potential and opportunity to thrive. There are a lot of consequential planning decisions that have to be made within this next term of council and even the next following council that's really going to set the tone for how we're going to go about planning and development. Like in my ward, we have the Claremont secondary plan, which is quite contentious for a long time. We have the South End Community Rec Center that is slated for construction, but has been delayed time and time again. So there are a lot of questions that people have when it comes to planning and design. And I felt convicted that perhaps there's an opportunity here to reach out to new residents and older mature residents who have been in the area for a long time and perhaps bring a new perspective on how we can go about the issue. So I really look forward to working with everyone here in this call and with the new councillor Alex as well. I think we all bring a quite pragmatic and there's a willingness to work in good faith to get a lot of these issues done. And I do think there is a lot of common ground in which we can achieve together. So I just leave it at that for now.
Excellent. So I'm gonna go to, there's two questions for you that were asked in advance. Okay, so Ken, with your training in urban planning, can you see Guelph adding small homes on existing lots to increase the number of beds available in Guelph?
Yeah, I think on a matter of principle, it's kind of a no-brainer solution to how we can go about infill that is like context sensitive. There are a lot of mature neighborhoods north of Ward 6 that could really see the benefit and value of secondary units or garden suites, as they call in other municipalities. In Vancouver, it's quite common practice for there to be laneway housing, which is essentially a garage that's converted into an accessory dwelling unit, and it's been proven quite successful over there and in other municipalities to kind of accommodate for, you know, more units and dwellings. But I think there is a concern that people would take advantage of these rules. It's no secret that we have a pretty big renter community here in Guelph with the university. So we have to go about it from a context sensitive approach, but I do think there are ways in which we can tweak some of our current bylaw that was put into place and just see how we can approach it from a context perspective rather than we can't have it across the board.
Okay, can I just ask, can I just ask you to expand upon it being taken advantage of? I don't quite understand what you mean.
So I think there's a concern because there are a lot of rental units here in the city that, you know, this policy, like just at a high level, it's not going to be used to its intentions. Perhaps there are going to be people that don't necessarily have like a very vested interest in the community that just put something together that's very sloppy and calls it a day. I can't really get into the specifics of that, but just the essence of the bylaw, I think there are some concerns regarding that in itself, but it's just at a high level, like I do support it. I do think that we need to have it. It's a necessity if we want to see us intensify in the city in a gentle way. So,
okay, thank you. I just wanted to ask one more quick question. Will we need to amend the bylaw about driveway width to accommodate extra vehicles that will predictably come with increased people per city lot? I mean, that's more of a comment than
question. Yeah, no, it's also no secret we have issues with parking. The city currently doesn't have much of a parking strategy or parking plan in place. And especially in Ward 6, where I am, there are a lot of folks that are on the Gordon Street intensification corridor that are very concerned that they're gonna not have parking. Like for me, I live off Vaughan Street, just off Gordon. And there's a risk with the new development that's coming into place that our side street parking is going to be eliminated to make way for the entrance to the new building. And I do feel that there are a lot of voices in the conversation that aren't necessarily being heard and addressed. And for me, like, it would be amazing to live in a world where we can just live without our car and just hop on transit. But I do think we have to go about this from a Guelph context perspective, in which we see how we can align strategies to encourage people to get on the bus off the corridor, but at the same time to really address that need for and demand for parking. And so I'm looking forward to working with staff to see if there are solutions that we can table right now, here now. And for myself as well, like, I rely on my car quite a bit. I relied on transit when I was a student, but if you really want to get around Guelph and have a comfortable quality of life, like, the reality is we still need our car. And so this is going back to the driveway width, this is something that I would look into as well. I look forward to working with my council mates and staff on that.
Absolutely. And now I'm going to ask you the question that I've asked everyone else. What makes your ward unique? And what do you think you need to know about the other wards in Guelph?
Yeah, so I think there's this conception that Ward 6 is kind of the other city in Guelph. We're not necessarily a part of Guelph. And it kind of feels like when you enter the South End, it's just completely different from the character of existing Guelph that you see. So I really want to kind of clear the conception of that and try to see if there are ways in which we can bring about culture change within the South, and that makes existing residents in the North feel like, you know, Ward 6 and Guelph and South Guelph is in fact part of Guelph. So there's a bit of that that I want to try to work on at a high level. And I think it all comes down to building relationships with people in the inner city and also people within my constituency. Just to put it in short, Ward 6 is probably the newest part of town. The last 10 to 15 years, most of it was farmland, but it's mostly a big subdivision that's been brought in. So there is a lot of opportunity in which we go about the development and growth, and also finding ways to really bring, I guess, the South End into the existing fabric in a way that makes Ward 6 attractive, to put it in short.
Okay, so I will ask one of the advanced questions, I mean, as in questions that were sent in advance. let's see here. What do you know about the Heritage Act, and what are your opinions on preserving and reusing heritage buildings and landscapes?
Yeah, so I am also a landscape architecture alumni at the University of Guelph. I'm currently undergoing my certification to become a landscape architect through the OALA. And, you know, where we can, I do think we should do our best to preserve the heritage that's existing whenever we can. It's one of those ways in which we can build upon the culture of the space. And you know, that's very important and very powerful to building, to city building. I'm not a heritage planner, so I don't have expertise on heritage itself or the Heritage Act in particular. But I do think we can work more closely with our advisory committee and heritage staff, and even see if we can build capacity in our current planning staff to go about making more clear designations that the public can kind of fall back on. In Brampton right now, we have a historic that's where I actually work as well. I work for the city of Brampton as an urban designer over there. We have a pretty big heritage planning team, and it's very clear what is listed heritage and what is designated heritage. And I think there are ways in which we can incorporate those, I guess, labeling, if you want to call it, into how we go about our current process for heritage designation and just heritage evaluation in general. So.
Okay, thank you. And just one more clarification for you, Ken. I think earlier you mentioned that wards that were north of Ward 6 would be candidates for accessory housing. And so my question is, why not Ward 6?
I think I'm not looking at this necessarily from like a ward to ward perspective. I just think across the board, we should have this in general, but we do have to find a way to ease this and have a constructive conversation with our constituents. So for me in Ward 6, like, there are folks out there that are concerned about this new bylaw, but I do think there are opportunities in my ward to go about implementing such a thing. I think Reed Heritage actually, in part of, there are a few units actually that they tried this out. And you have some of this sprinkled within like Courtright Hills, for example. And it works quite well, actually. But I think there are folks out there that perhaps are near residents that are quite concerned just at the outset, maybe from what they've seen in the news. So for me, it'll be just my responsibility to go about connecting with my constituents and making sure that they know that this isn't something that's necessarily harmful, right? So Yeah, I would support this in my ward, but I definitely need to take a closer look at this before I make any commitments.
Absolutely. Thank you very much for clarifying that for me. And now I'd like to turn to Aaron, who has arrived. Aaron, would you like to give us your spiel about your hopes and dreams for council this term? And then I'll ask you a few questions.
Yes, sorry, my camera isn't working. One of my hopes and dreams for council is that my camera will work someday. It keeps on giving me variable usage during Zoom, but I have many, many hopes in terms of safety and infrastructure. I think that one of the things across the board through Guelph and especially in Ward 1 that we see is there is a lack of crosswalks, there's a lot of speeding, and we aren't really living up to our walkable vision. And there's a lot of things that we can do just in terms of utilizing best practices for accessibility that will end up helping a lot of people across the whole city. We have a lot of food issues in Ward 1, which is not uncommon for other outskirt areas of the city too. And I think that if we work together with a lot of the existing nonprofits and small businesses, then we can come up with a solution that kind of benefits everybody. That's my hope.
I've asked this to every councillor elect. What is special about your ward, and what do you think you need to learn about the other wards?
Well, I think one of the things that is special about my ward is, well, I don't think it's different than other wards, though, is the amount of passion that everybody has for change, right? Like when I went around and knocked on doors, everybody really wants to kind of get in there and help if they can. And I want to let them, right? Like we want to have a lot of feedback for all of these new initiatives that we have in the city, and people want to be able to give it. So we just have to find easier ways to let people be involved in the decisions so that we know that we're making the right choices for the people who live in those areas. And as somebody who's like comparatively new to Guelph, compared to a lot of the other counselors, there's piles that I need to learn about all the other wards, right? I've been watching city council for the whole time that I've been here and trying to delegate as much as I can on issues. But just being able to go out and visit places and see what everyone's experiencing, I think that gives you the most perspective.
Okay, Aaron. The last council made serious errors of law in allowing the demolition of three heritage properties. The staff reports were also erroneous. Heritage Guelph opinions were ignored and disrespected by some staff and councillors. What do you know about the Ontario Heritage Act, and what are your opinions about preserving and reusing heritage buildings and landscapes?
I read through the Ontario Heritage Act, and it's incredibly process heavy. So I can imagine that there were many steps that were missed when we're talking about other buildings that they've kind of dealt with in the past. And I know specifically one of the ones that they've been talking about was meant for housing for low-income populations, and that they'd wanted to have some accessible units on it. I know a lot of people think that the most sustainable way to build things is to reuse buildings, and that is very true for a lot of them. It is less true when you're dealing with accessibility, because those kinds of retrofits are really a lot more expensive to do. So I think that in the future, what we need to do to avoid issues like this is to be very careful about what we're selecting for which uses. So like maybe that was not the most appropriate place for that type of a building, and we could have built that in a different space so that we didn't have the heritage piece need to be brought down because of the cost.
Okay, thank you. The reformatory lands on your Park Road offer a huge resource for city residents and the city economy. What do you know about this property? And would you support its preservation as a city-owned or a provincial park?
I would support that. And it's a matter of trying to get the province to agree is the problem. So regardless of what I think, and it's about trying to pressure the province to do the right thing. I personally think the province should have given it to us for free because they mandated that we have growth and you have to have a certain amount of parkland per person in our rules. So they should just give it to us. But that's a long negotiation. And with the Ford government and how they behave, it seems like a long shot to me.
Yeah, fair enough. Finally, how will new council members help Guelph, and I'm talking the city rather than just the corporation, meet our globally fair share of climate action and also climate adaptation preparedness?
So I think there's a lot of smaller things that we can do that may or may not be popular. So it just kind of depends on the people. Bylaw wise, we've got an issue right now where we have leaves that are just everywhere. And if we wanted to be climate conscious, then we would encourage people to be leaving those leaves on their lawns. And that would actually cut down the cost for the city as well, so that we wouldn't be having to pick up these leaves. And we could even have the University of Guelph do a pollinator count, right? And turn it into a study so that we could see if that is something that really does make an impact, and even considered a trial. But that's more of a getting people used to having a natural space on their property and changing people's hearts to kind of go along with the climate plan. But there's a lot of things like that, and planting flowers on the boulevards, and encouraging people to use less climate heavy products. So like I personally have a lot of things that are unscented, and those do end up causing a lot of air pollution on top of water issues when you're dealing with water management. So it's more of an awareness program and a change in a couple of bylaws, but I think that some small changes could actually make a big difference.
Absolutely, I really like your idea about keeping the leaves on the lawns and getting the university in there to do some sort of study, because that would be an excellent partnership. I wanted to ask everyone, what is your dream list of things that will be addressed, and hopefully things that will be not just addressed, but enacted in the next 4 years? And Erin, is it okay if I ask you first?
Sure.
Okay.
Safety and accessibility is my dream. I want everyone to be able to go everywhere in the city and have equal access. So that means sidewalks, trails, crosswalks, bus access, being able to get into all the public buildings, all of that. Like everybody should, and that even includes financial barriers. So we need to make the city for everyone.
Okay, thank you. And I would like to ask this question of the other councillors elect. So Linda, could I go to you now?
I'm going to start with a little bit, because I missed that question about what makes Ward 4 different. And I think Ward 4, similar to Ward 6, is relatively new. There's a lot of new development, and there are a lot of opportunities for some creativity in this area. I think we have a lot of woods and just trying to build the culture here. But my dream is really, I'm going to say equity, an equity lens to everything that we do. And my experience with equity in 16 years with the Upper Grand is that equity is not a policy. It's not a caboose that's tacked onto our list of policies. It's really a lens that we do everything through. And I would like to see that operationalized in the city of Guelph, everything that we do. And an example is, and I see Michelle's on the call, is around housing and the conversations around affordable housing and not-for-profit housing, the way that the funding comes from the provincial government is really biased towards single units, two units, and really doesn't meet the needs of our families in the West End that have, you know, our new Canadians with large families. And so in terms of equity, it's on the ground, but that lends up looking at policy and finance and regulations and all those other things, and really pushing back. And part of that links into the communication, working to build what I call the parade. So people who this impacts, so it's not me who is, it is authentic, giving the skills and ability for people to express this directly themselves.
Thank you. Michelle, could I turn to you to answer this question about your hopes, or sorry, your dream list of what could happen at council?
And that's a really big question to me because there's so much that I still have to learn. My priority or my dream may change as more information that I get. What I would wish would be to have a fully functional council that can work together and collaborate and agree to disagree, but together make the best decisions for our city.
That is an excellent answer. Thank you.
Thank you.
And now, Ken, I will ask you the same question.
Sorry, I missed that.
Yeah, I don't know where to start. I think there are a lot of high hopes and aspirations, and definitely a very heavy sense of responsibility that's been placed on all of us councillor elects. For myself in particular, I do want to try to bring about a design perspective to council when we go about planning issues in particular. I do think we need to find a way to get out of our little silos, because I do think we all bring about a wealth of perspectives and expertise, residents, councillors alike, and we have to find a way to weave that together in a way that works, right? So I look forward just to working with everyone and seeing the collaboration ahead. Again, like I said, I think there is a lot of good faith in the room, and so I want to see how we can capitalize on that while we can, and just work towards common ground instead of rhetoric and divisiveness. We definitely don't have to export what we've seen in the midterms up here, especially in municipal level, right? So at the end of the day, we're here to work on behalf of the city and serve the city as a whole. So let's see what we can do with that spirit.
Excellent. Thank you very much. I'd like to turn to Phil and ask him about what his dream is for the next term in council.
Imagine all the people, imagine all the councilmen. For me, the broad dream really is to get out of silos and to work collaboratively as a council. I think that too often we have tended to imagine ourselves as a legislature or a House of Commons, and we are not that. We are a council that should be working toward conciliation, collaboration, and cooperation. But related to that, I'm also going to say that one of my dreams is that we start to respect governance and process, because I do believe that this creates some significant problems that could actually get us into some legal hot water at some point if we are not careful. We have a procedural bylaw so that we as councillors and so that the community in general can understand that the rules are fair to everyone and it's a level playing field. And when we don't do that, we expose ourselves to being accused of favoritism. So consequently, I would like to see us become very familiar with governance and procedure and ensure that we do create that collaborative environment where we work as a real team. My other dream, I hope we have a few social events. I'd like to go out with these characters and have a coffee or maybe even a mint julep for breakfast.
Okay, mint juleps during the Kentucky Derby. It would be fascinating. I want to thank all of the councilors-elect for joining us today. We very much appreciate it. And we wish you the best of luck as you attend what I will call counselor boot camp to get you acquainted with how council works. And I wish you the best of luck in, I believe your first council meeting is on November the 15th, which is just next week. So thank you all for being here. Okay, everyone, you can have your say. You can give your feedback on this municipal election. Did you vote? Where and when? Were you happy with the number of voting stations? Please take the survey. You can have your say about the downtown renewal project, learning about the environmental assessments, taking the survey, and providing feedback on things like car and bike lanes and how each area of the study can be improved. This downtown renewal project is going over years. It will be years in the making. This is a provincial have your say. It has to do with conserving Ontario's natural heritage while Doug Ford builds more housing. In fact, it's the More Homes Built Faster Act 2022, which if passed would ensure that cities, towns, and rural communities grow with a mix of ownership and rental housing types that meet the needs of all Ontarians. So please have your say about whether not only housing will meet the needs of Ontarians, but also whether the preservation of wetlands and farmlands and greenbelt will also meet the needs of all Ontarians. Please Google ERO019-6161 to get to that survey. Next week on Breezy Breakfast, we are going to be talking about the role of nuclear power in getting to net zero by 2051. Our guests will include Evan Ferrari, John Strannert, who works for SNC-Lavalin, and Goretti, and I forget her last name, who is a professor at the University of Waterloo. Thank you for joining in. And we will see you next week, bright and early at 8 a.m.
Thanks for joining us today. With these five new faces, the next 4 years are sure to be full of surprise. Many thanks to our guests and our moderator. Music is provided by Jules Germ. I'm Jia Yuyan, the producer of the Breezy Breakfast podcast.